Hey, thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Visor. My name is Zane Scott with Zane Scott Media. This podcast, we dive in and go into things beyond the racetrack with drivers, crew members, officials, and more. If you like what you hear, we are available on all the podcasting apps, as well as on Facebook at Zane Scott Media. And then you can find us on Instagram as well at Z_S_Media. If you're interested in supporting the show or sponsoring the show in any manner, please reach out to me on Facebook, Instagram, X, or by phone number. You can find that on our Facebook page. And thank you for listening and hope you enjoy. All right, Chris, episode 3. We're here at your shop in Grafton, I believe. You sent me the location on the way here. I totally got lost. Kind of knew where I was at, kind of didn't know where I was at. But we're here at the shop, got the car behind us. So episode 1 was filmed in the trailer for Lane Racing. Episode 2 was outdoors in Mansfield. And episode 3, we're in a shop. So we're mobile with all of our episodes here. But I'm going to start this off just like I did episode 1 and 2 and ask you for a quote that inspires you or kind of means a lot to you that you kind of look at in, you know, maybe for inspiration in racing, but in life as a whole.
Yeah, so I guess a quote, I kind of go with a lot is if you're comfortable doing something, you're not doing it hard enough. And you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. It's not always easy to do it, but I try to preach that. I'm a basketball coach now. This is my first year coaching basketball, and I've tried to take that to them that, you know, if you're just running through a drill or anything in life, really, you can do it a little bit harder and get a little bit better. So I guess that'd probably be one.
Okay. Yeah. I like that one. If you're comfortable, you're not doing it hard enough. Kind of goes in, you know, hand with, you know, be comfortable being uncomfortable and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, that makes, you know, pretty good sense there. So I think last episode I used a song, and on the way up here, it was about an hour drive to get here. I was kind of trying to think of what I wanted to use as my, you know, quote for this episode. And I was really thinking back and forth on what I wanted it to be. And I think the one that I'm going to go with, a quote from a TikTok reel that I saw from, you know, one of those creators that are out there, but it kind of the gist of the quote or the background of the context, whatever you want to call it, is the guy's kind of sitting there and he's getting ready to drink an energy drink. And his like subconscious or his friend or whatever it is like, don't drink that, you know, it's not good for you. When he goes and he replies back that the sink is broken, inferring that he can't, you know, get water. And the subconscious or, you know, the second person goes, wait for the rain, brother. And I think like I sat there and I was like, initially, I was like, that quote goes so hard. Like, that is such a hard quote. Like, wait for the rain. But then I think about it more, and I'm like, it makes so much sense. I think, I know in my life, like, I do not have patience. Like, if I want something, I'm going to do everything I can to get it as soon as I can. And, like, I don't exercise that enough. And I heard that quote, and it's like, wait for the rain. And I think it's perfect, too, because I lived in Texas for a while, and, like, it never rained there. And you're waiting for it, and you're waiting for it. And one day it eventually comes and it's like this giant relief that you get. And I think that applies to a lot of things in life. If you just wait for the rain or wait for the good things, you're eventually going to get them and you're going to be glad that you waited. And it's going to be this very, you know, happy, you know, almost ceremonial moment in life. So I think that one for me is going to stick with me for a little bit. It's going to be in the back of my mind. One, because I just think it's a hard quote. Like, I almost want to get it tattooed on my body somewhere. Like, wait for the rain, brother. But just overall, like, the bigger picture, or when you back out of just the quote and look at, you know, what that could signal or you know, symbolize is so much bigger than that. Yeah. And I think, you know, in racing too, it's like such a theory, I don't want to say a theory, but like an idea of, you know, you can have all these races, you can be the bridesmaid, but never the bride. And, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth, and, you know, one night you junk a car or whatever. But if you, you know, you stick at it and you, you know, keep trying and you're trying hard and you're uncomfortable, getting comfortable with uncomfortableness, eventually it's going to pay off and you're going to get the win and it's going to rain and, yeah, and all of that. And for you, you know, the season's been kind of up and down. You know, we got the video of the incident with Van Gurley at Fremont and stuff, and that's kind of just one highlight of the season for you, but it's been an up and down season. You guys have kind of explored some other tracks out there. I know you guys, I think we're just at Lernerville or something here recently. I mean, what to you, as we enter like kind of the last couple weeks of the season, is going to be the rain moment, that final, like, here it is, you know, we've waited all season for this and we're finally getting what, you know, maybe the results we wanted, or even if it's not the results, just something to kind of look at and be like, this is what we needed.
Yeah. So probably going forward, you know, the last couple of weeks, I think we have 3 nights at Sharon maybe. And we have the Lou Blaney Memorial, which is a pretty big race, the World of Outlaws show, which is obviously, you know, that's, if you make that show at my, you know, experience, I haven't raced with them. So if we make that show, that's the rain, in my opinion. And then we have a race at Skyline, I think the night before the Outlaw show. And we went there last year and we ran like 11th to 3rd or 4th. And the steering was broke because I'd flipped at Sharon the week before. And steering was just wonky. So I was out there trying your best, and then the throttle stuck under yellow. And so I was sitting there with my hand pulling the throttle up off of the floor, or trying to hold it shut, and it faced them issues. I think we finished 5th or 6th. I don't remember. Then we were there earlier this year and we started maybe 10th at Skyline, and it come down rain in lap 2, and we were up to like 5th, right through the center, right through the gut slick. Just have a good car there. So that's a pretty big weekend. That would be the rain. If we could go click off a good run at Skyline, then head north 3.5 hours or whatever to Sharon and make an Outlaw show there. And once you're in the show, then you're just racing. So, yeah, Sharon so far has been the rain all year. That's the only place that we've consistently been good at. And that probably is a big thanks to Kenny Graber, who builds a lot of race car parts. But more importantly, we built a relationship of he'll come and work on a race car, specifically Sharon, because he's got some 305 guys he helps out at Attica and Fremont. So Sharon, I get all the attention from him, and man, we're mostly just comfortable. I don't know how great we are, but it's really easy to drive race cars when you're comfortable. And I think the rain is all looks ahead to that Skyline Sharon weekend, or, you know, running good in the Lou Blaney, which goes back to Sharon. So we'll wait for that, hopefully.
Yeah, are you planning to run? Is it the Outlaw show at Wayne County as well? I think they got one more show left.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to run that. You got to go to Wayne County with the idea of you're going to leave this thing basically in the cornfield or in the pond off of 2, or in the guardrail and 4. Those are the 3 options you have at Wayne County, and if you somehow bring it back in one piece, that's a win on its own, you know. And we went there one time last year, and they got all the Attica Fremont cars that night as well. And we went and run through the B main and sucked. I learned it's really hard to be uncomfortable running the fence there, and comfortable with the thought of, you know, this thing, you have to be on the ragged edge of, you know, disaster. And I have this car, so I'm not always willing to do that, especially that place. So I don't have no interest in going. I love watching races there. That's about all I need to do there, though. So we'll skip that Outlaw show.
Are you guys, I'm not familiar with the schedule, like date wise. I assume, are you guys going to run the Jim Ford at Fremont? And then maybe, are you doing Attica this weekend?
So we'll go Sharon this weekend. It's hard for us to get off work. I got all my guys work. The only one that's, you know, reliably, you don't have to ask if they can get off, is my grandpa, just because he's retired. You know, my buddy Chase, who just left, he works till 3:30 every day of the week, and as do I. My dad he can get off when he wants to, but I got to give him notice. And Riley, Evan, they both work, and it's hard for us to get off on Fridays. It's got to be pretty limited to what we want to go race, and I don't necessarily need to go race Attica. So we'll go to Sharon Saturday, and then I think we'll do the Jim Fords the next weekend, I believe. We'll go both nights of that. Then we'll go, I believe it's the Lou Blaney or the Outlaw Show at Sharon. So if it's the Outlaw Show at Sharon, we'll go Skyline Sharon, then back to Sharon for Lou Blaney, or however that works out. So I think those are our last however many races, and we got, this will be a busier stretch for us. Like, we're just not used to racing two nights a week anymore, and really I miss doing it. It's a lot of fun. I wish we could race, you know, three or four nights a week, but financially we couldn't, and getting off of work wise, we could never manage to pull that. So I'm really excited for this next month, this last month, I suppose.
And for context for those listening, we're recording on September 3rd. So by the time this episode probably gets released, the Ford's going to be over. This weekend will be over. The Outlaw Show at Sharon and that will probably be over. So you're going to be listening to it and kind of like, those shows already happened. So you're kind of getting the preface to the book for the rest of this month for Chris. So I know you mentioned, it's easy for your grandpa to kind of get off because he's obviously retired. Your dad works, Chase works. He was just here at the shop, right before we started recording. Elizabeth was here, your girlfriend as well. For you, and I know we talked, on the first two episodes, kind of hit with family and supporters and all that, and kind of want to hit that same topic here as well. I know your background into racing, or how you got introduced into it, is probably a little bit different than I think most people. A lot of people get kind of born into it. They're in at a young age. I know for me, that was a case. For you, I know you've mentioned to me, previously kind of throughout the summer, that's, a little bit different for you. So when did you get introduced to it? Get to the, kind of this point where you're at now with, being behind the wheel, and then, what's that like with your family kind of being basically your crew outside of, Chase and Elizabeth and maybe a couple other people here and there?
So my dad raced back in the 90s, back when it was an Econo division. I may have raced with your dad. So that was, I think he went 4 years, and then, stopped, whatever, life gets in the way. He won races and, should have won a track championship at Attica. And, so he's always taken me to the races. I don't remember if it was my first race, but one of my earliest memories of a race was, now I'm going to draw a blank here. It was either the Brad Doty Classic before it left Attica, or it was one of their big, big shows. And I kept my dad away from the racetrack because I had to go to the bathroom. And I was too young to not be afraid of sitting in the bathroom alone in a strange place. So that's my first memory at a racetrack. But then I started just becoming like an avid fan. Like, I just loved racing. My dad would take us and we'd camp out, and only usually at the big shows. But, once I turned 16, I started going to regular shows and just, becoming really engulfed with the whole thing. Like, I just fell in love, and, being from out here where we're an hour away from the nearest dirt track, all the way around, I think there's four of them, but every single one of them is an hour. Nobody knows what racing is. So it was hard to find friends to go. So I would just go alone if I had to. And then I decided, I liked it enough. I want to go to UNOH for school, college, and work on their motorsports team or in the high performance shop, whatever. And the summer before I left for school, my dad, I had worked on nothing. That was realizing now what I know, that was going to suck. I was in for a reality check. So my dad set me up with Mike Linder and, the whole Linder gang. And I, jumped on board for that year. And it was supposed to be with Dale Blaney, who, I've watched win what feels like, I think, 136 All-Star wins. I feel like I've been at all of them somehow. So that was exciting. You know, that's the first guy I ever got to work with, is the, you know, greatest All-Star guy of all time, or most winning All-Star guy of all time. And, I think we did that for maybe 2-3 years. I don't remember working with the Lenders. And, finally, I don't know how I conned my dad into it. I saw a race car for sale by Tim Merrill, who's unfortunately passed away now, but he, had a race car for sale, and me and Landon Lalonde went up there and looked at it, because he lives about 15 minutes away from me. And he's like, dude, I think you should do it. Well, I didn't have nothing to do it with, you know? So the next day, I stayed in Fremont that night with the Lenders. And the next day, me, Michael, and Steven went over there. And on the way home, Michael called my dad and said, hey, this is the deal. If you're going to do it, this is probably a good piece to do it with. So, my dad loaned me all the money to get started. And, you know, luckily my dad's the bank in that situation, so I don't have interest on it. But, he technically bought my first race car and everything that come with it. And, I had to pay him back the whole time in trying to keep a race car on track and pay him back. Luckily, like I said, he was the bank. So if I was late, I was late, you know. But so that was probably at 18, I think. 18 or 19, I started racing. And I guess I think 19, maybe. I don't know. It all blends together at some point. But we started in a 305 and, you know, still helped the Lenders when we weren't racing. So I still got to go do Speed Week with them and just try to absorb as much knowledge as you can. Since after I started with them, I didn't even go to college at that point. I realized what I wanted to do was sprint cars, not, you know, modifieds or dragsters or whatever, you know, UNOH had to offer. So I totally ignored college at that point, went to a community college, and so I could still go to the races when I wanted to. And yeah, I guess I got hooked there, with the driving deal. And sometimes I really miss being a crew guy, because crew guys don't have bills to pay. But there's a reason people do it for so long. It's because it's exhilarating, fun, whatever gets you, you know, gets you off per se. But, yeah, I Lenders were honestly just the gateway drug. They showed me everything I needed to know. Not needed to know, but there's a lot of come to Jesus moments with me and Michael, or me and Steph, or I think me even Steven have had them. So if anybody were to get credit for it, it'd be them. But they have a lot of guys ahead of me that are people are giving them credit for, so and they deserve it. But yeah, now we're here. I don't know, that transition, the 305 to 410 deals, honestly just got tired of 305 stuff. They weren't teching at all back then. It was getting pretty obvious. Certain guys were winning races that had never really been winning races, and then you know, all of a sudden they start teching and those guys stop winning races. That's kind of obvious to me. I think they even went and run 360 races and I don't remember if they won races there or not, but, so that deal got old. My dad got tired of that. And, he told me, you know, I don't know if he even told me to keep my eyes out. He just kicked it around, talked about it a little bit here and there. And then, one night we were at the races and my dad wasn't there. He was homesick. And Mark Keegan walked up to me and said, hey, Todd Heller has a motor for sale, a 410, if you want to go get it. And I'm like, man, I don't know that I'm ready for that. But shit, that's okay. You know, if he's saying do it, maybe you do it. So we went and got it and bolted it in. And our first night went, exceeded all expectations. And yeah, now I think this is my second year running 410s. So it's getting to travel, man, that really doesn't I don't know how guys sit at Attica and Fremont and race every weekend the same two places and never break the mold, but I'm so glad we're out of it and getting to go new places and different places, and now we're caught up to where we're at today. So I started late in relative. I didn't race any go-karts. I didn't race anything at all. And then jumped into a 305, now to a 410. And
I want to go back to the Lenders here. And you know, I think throughout the, I mean, I want to say the Ohio region, but at this point, it's almost like national what they have done, not only for the local racing scene, but, you know, really the national scene as well. They've kind of become the benchmark for setting people up for success. Obviously, we've seen it with Carson Macedo. You saw it with Buddy now. DJ Neto came over for a little bit. Cole's been, in that shop quite a bit. And, it's kind of, I don't say a revolving door, because it's really not a revolving door, but it's a, hey, you're here, get the talent up, get to that point, and then get to the next step. And it's kind of been, pretty successful there. And now they're, linked up with, Farmer on the motorsports school deal. And they're basically running that every single Sunday, and all that. And, obviously Mike is the race director now at Fremont on Saturday. So he's calling the shots there. So, I mean, they're just a local icon and legend of the sport here locally. And then, like I said, going nationally now, but when you were with them, what was like the biggest takeaway that you got from them? Was it the skill sets? Was it the outlooks on life? Was it just kind of the mentality? I mean, what stands out to you the most from your time with them that you've kind of taken from that and used it to get to where you are now?
Honestly, everything. I was in a really, that age of really impressionable. Like, you're that 17, 18, 19 year old self. You think you know everything. You don't know nothing. Like, you just don't. And you're in a spot where people that care about you can teach you things. And so the first thing that stood out to me was their maintenance program, their meticulous work ethic with stuff. Like, I think the first day I was there, I got told, if you're standing around, say something. Don't wait. Do not wait for us to tell you what to do. If you need something to do, ask. Don't be a factory worker is what they always say. And so that got instilled right away that this isn't going to be a deal where you just get to hang out and have fun, do the cool stuff, get victory lane photos. You're going to work for it. That's the start of the racing deal. The life deal, man, there's been so many lessons that I've learned. One, for example, me and Mike have actually never talked about it, but one night we were wanting to go hang out with our buddies and, I think Howdy Sabo and Chevy Farmer and me, Cole Macedo, a couple other guys, I'm sure. We're all wanting to go hang out. And here I used up a race car the week before, I think. I was at Lenders tearing it apart that weekend. Here I went to the races Friday night and helped somebody come back. We wanted to go out that night, and Steph was like, hey, that car in the garage needs to move. And we're like, oh, I'm going to finish it in the morning. And she's like, Michael wants to work on the Ranger in the morning or something, and, it'd probably be smart to get it out there. And I'm like, okay, well, you don't realize you're in a house full of people that, he was probably a bit miffed I even went to the races, because my race car was half torn apart. He probably a little bit pissed I didn't finish it. And that was a wake up call too. I mean, there's millions of those, too many to think of or to count, but that one reigns in my head a lot. So it's, the life stuff, the work stuff, that's all good and dandy, but there's a reason they get so many guys in and out of there. they're obsessed with the sport. You know, Steph has, I think, two TVs in the living room, and it's not two TVs because, you know, you got to have a football game on one and the race on the other, or, you know, whatever. It's two separate races, or the other one's just off if there's only one race on. It's, she's pretty diehard. And then Mike, just, he's so damn smart. Like, he always told me that he didn't know anything when he started. He didn't know what counter steering was, you know? And now he's one of the best driver coaches. Honestly, I don't know that there's a lot in the country, but man, there's not a guy that I'd rather go talk to if there's, you know, hey, you know, if I'm doing this, should I be doing this? Or, hey, did I do the right thing here? Or anything like that. That guy's just so detail oriented that there's, you don't, you know exactly what you did wrong, and he's not going to be, you know, bashful about it. He's going to tell you, you made a shit lap, you know? So,
and then not only that, but it's like, you know, we talked, you know, you got the racing lessons and then there's the life lessons. And it's like, when you look at the life lessons that you can get from them, it's almost surreal on what there is. Cause you know, Steph and, you know, I don't know how Mike is personally, you know, it's been a while since I've hung out with any of them, but like, I know Steph is very spiritual and is a big, you know, believer in the things that will happen the, you know, way they happen and how they're supposed to. And it's like, when you're around that too, like they're, I mean, she's just so upbeat and positive. And I think that's very infectious and contagious to kind of get into other people. So when you have like, you know, a really bad night where you junk a race car, or like you come back to the shop and like the day just, you know, kicks your ass more or less, and you come back and that is what you come home to, it just, there's like a, I think there'd be like a peace that you get from that. Like for me, you know, my grandparents are that peace. I mean, grandma's, bless her heart, is like a savior to me. Like I, if my life is rock bottom and it is spiraling out of control, I go to her. And it's like, there's just this sense of peace and tranquility there for me. And like, I don't get that with my dad. I love my dad very much, but yeah. I don't get that with him. Yeah. And anybody that knows him probably can understand why. Like the guy, I mean, I love him. He's just dry. He's very emotionalist, you know, on the, you know, so for me, I guess my grandparents, that is where I go to unwind and feel at peace, even if like internally I am fighting World War VII in my head, like that for me. And it's like, I look at Steph and I can only imagine like that is what that household is like. Like, it's just, you walk in there and it's take the day, leave the baggage at the door, figure it out later, unwind and relax.
Yeah. Steph, I have too many stories for Steph, but she, yeah, every morning, you know, no matter how you did the night before, you know, whether it was, you know, the worst night imaginable, I think I've showed up there with crumbled up race cars and, you know, was staying there to wake up, work on them the next morning. And she don't care. She's going to come in with a song playing. She's got all wake up songs for everybody. So when you hear your song come on, you just want to turn around and not yell at her, but be like, dude, do you know what happened last night? And she don't care. It's time to get up. And that's what she always, she just, that's going to be the pace for the day, is how she wakes you up almost. And it's usually, you know, morning, brand new day. Yes. It's been so long since I've worked with him, but I don't remember her exact quote, but yeah, the morning deals where you know, like I say, you wake up to your song and she asks if you want breakfast, and you know, hey, your suit's washed, you know, if you need a shower, go ahead now. If you need in the bathroom, go ahead now. And then the nights that suck, you know, in, she is just the type of person that she knows when nights suck. First off, she knows racing. So, those texts where she'll, you know, you get a text on the way home, driving home, and get, hey, love you, son. Those nights are tough, but it makes you feel so much better just knowing, you know, hey, I know what you're going through here, and it's going to get better kind of deal. So she's definitely the peace keeper there. She's the upbeat energy there. She, if you're not out in the shop by 8-9 o'clock in the morning, she's in, you know, letting you know. And that's a great person to have around a group of guys that, you know, probably stay up too late talking about racing and, you know, never, ever drinking, just stay up late because the whole group's obsessed. So yeah, Steph's a special person in general. She's like a mom to me. I've gone to her with things that I've never gone to anybody with. And Michael's like a dad to me, but he's definitely the, like you said, that, you know, you don't go to them when you're feeling bad for yourself, cause they're not going to help you out on that too much. You know, he'll let you know when you messed up or whatever. So that dynamic, they just work so well together and honestly teach life lessons without even trying, I'm sure. But
do you, now that you've kind of, I don't want to say outgrown, because you really, you don't ever outgrow something like that, but since you've moved on a little bit, now you're kind of on your own and you're figuring out your way and the way that works best for you, do you have times now where you're kind of like, maybe you start to get in your head, like you start to beat yourself up a little bit and you need to go back to when you were in that period with them and kind of try to bring up like memories or something that kind of like bring back in your head, like lessons or something like that? Like, do you still go back to those times frequently on your own to get through what you're going through now? Or have you kind of gotten to the point where you have those lessons instilled now and now you've kind of taken them and put your own twist or like your own methodology to it? Like, how do you get through it now where you don't necessarily have that access that you did before?
Yeah, a little bit of both. You know, I'll still reach out to them. You know, I try to leave it to where I'm getting desperate before I reach out. And yeah, you just look back at, you know, how did even their driver, you know, how did Buddy handle things, or how did Carson, I think the one year we had 8 different drivers or something like that. And so those lessons, you know, you can take back from, but everything's also so different. You know, they have a bad night where, you know, say something broke or an engine broke or whatever. And yeah, it stinks, but it's, at the end of the day, it's just a lot of work. For us, that, you know, something breaks or we tear up a race car or, you know, whatever happens, those lessons are pretty out the window, because it's a totally different scenario. I didn't mind bolting race cars together every week when Buddy would, you know, smoke a wall or just whatever, effort gets you in certain places. So I'll fix race cars based off effort all day. But when you do it on your own stuff, it sucks pretty bad, because it's coming out of your pocket. But yeah, I don't know. I think they just set me up in the right mindset of how to get through things. Like, just, I don't know, if you're well prepared, you're going to be in a good place. Well, I went to the right place to learn about being well prepared. And Michael got in my ass the one year, because, you know, every time we show up, we'd still be working on stuff, and basically just got told that's unacceptable. And that people take notice on stuff like that. And now I'm the same way. If we roll the trailer or unload the trailer and there's anything to work on, I'm in a pretty bad mood. So yeah, just situational is how they prepare you. And I can use it now. I can use it 30 years down the road. You know, Michael made it, I'll say he made it pretty, this goes back to your quote deal. It's not really a quote, it's more of a mindset, but there's 2 things you control in life that nobody can affect. Nobody can ever take it away from you, and that's your attitude and your effort. And so if your attitude's good and your effort's good, well, you know, the situation's in your hands, essentially. Like, I've again, I preach that to my players now, that if you come in here with the right attitude and the right effort, man, we are going to be a problem, you know, especially if I get all 10 of you to do it. So, I've tried to take that outlook to life, but it's easier said than done.
Yeah. Attitude just plays such a major role, I think, in everything we do. And I don't think we respect that aspect enough. So, like, I know for me, obviously right now I'm in automotive sales. I work nearly 6 days a week. I get Fridays off, and I usually work the Fridays, but like Saturdays, you know, I go to work and I wake up at 7:30. I get there about 8 o'clock. I'm there till 3 PM if I get out on time. And it's like, all right, I have now lost the beginning of my Saturday. And it's like, I look at the clock, I look at the schedule, I look at Fremont's Facebook page, and I'm like, cool, gates open at 4, racing at 7, you know, typical or whatever. So it's, you know, fly out of work. You know, for the first half of this year, I was living just outside of Fremont, but it was like, stop at the house, change, you know, maybe grab a bite to eat. You know, I was living with somebody. It was like, you know, talk to them a little bit, you know, have a conversation there, kind of let them know what's going on. Like, you know, you're trying to make the most of your time that you have. And then it's, you get to the racetrack. And I'm lucky in the position that I'm in that I don't have to get there as early, because I don't have to unload a car or anything. But like, for me, it's, you know, I still got to get there somewhat early, because if I have, you know, all these artistic visions in my head, like I'll scroll through Instagram or TikTok or whatever, and I'll see a video and I'm like, I really like that art design, I want to try to copy that. I got to get there early to probably get half the footage, because a lot of it's behind the scenes stuff. And, you know, I want to get situated, and if I'm going to mount GoPros, I got to find who I want to mount them on, and I got to, you know, kind of work around the crews. And it's just, there's a lot of stuff that I have to do. But there have been days where I just wake up in a bad mood with a poor attitude, and I go through the work day and it's like, oh, this sucks. Like, I'll go through a work day on a Saturday and I won't sell a car. And like, that is, you know, in sales, like that's the worst feeling. 'Cause like Saturday is your busiest day. If you don't sell a car on Saturday, you have sucked. And it's like, I won't sell a car, and I'll leave. And like, I didn't make any money today, I just worked for nothing. And now I have to go work basically again until 10 PM or whatever. And it's like, you go home, you grab your camera, you're still in a bad mood. The bad mood, you then kind of, for me, I am really bad at projecting. Like, if I'm in a bad mood, it's going to be someone else's problem. And like, I hate that I'm like that. And I try not to be, and I'm trying to like really focus on that. But I have had a very bad problem with that. And I like, it's a just, oh, I project it. So then it causes issues there, and that makes the mood even worse. So then by the time I get to the track, I'm like, I do not want to be here. I would rather be at home. I'd rather be asleep. Like, I could think of 3 million things I'd rather do than be at this racetrack right now. Or it's, I'd rather be here, but I'd rather just be sitting in the stands with my dad and not have any responsibilities. But like, once I get there and I'm in that mindset, like, anything that I thought about doing escapes my mind. I'm not thinking about it. I walk up to, you know, whatever trailer I'm going to keep my stuff in. Usually great this season. Andrews has been a huge, huge help. Like, I've used his trailer, I think, almost every night at Fremont, like just putting in there. I think I used your trailer at the beginning of the year. And it's kind of just who's there and like, who's kind of closer to the entrance of the pit so I can get across or whatever. But like, I'll sit in there and get my camera ready, and I just don't want to do it. And then I'm ready. I got the camera in my hand. I'm ready to go. And I'm like, I think I'm just going to stand here for a minute. Like, I don't know what I want to shoot. I have no idea what I want to do. And yeah. And that's like my mindset. Like, I am spaced out.
That's why I'm really happy racing right now. We went 3 or 4 years chasing points and going to AFCS deal, which Dwayne does an amazing job with. And I'm still fortunate enough to have a cool guy help me or pay for it to be on there or with the AFCS. But man, just not points chasing. Like if we don't want to go to the racetrack, we don't go. If there's a 40% chance it's going to rain, we're going to sit at home, get in the pool and hope it don't rain at home. So, and if I had unlimited budget or higher budget, and then maybe that is something that who cares? We'll just go race. That's just, that's just time, money, and effort. That's all that is. That's the easiest parts of life, right?
It is. And I think when I am in those bad attitude, mental states, that's for me, I think what gets me the most, it's I don't have to be here. I don't, I'm not getting paid to be there. It's not like they're hey, $500, you show up tonight. I do a lot. I do it all for the love of the sport and for the love of, content creation, but it's I want to be somewhere else. And this summer with, everything that was happening in my life, and it's I wanted to be somewhere else. And now I look back on it and I'm I would have rather just been home. Yeah. And I'm it's not that I don't love the racetrack. It's not that I don't want to necessarily be there, but it's I've kind of gotten to the point now where I've realized there's just so much more to life than racing. And I know that's such a weird concept to put out there, and people are gonna be well, why are you even doing a podcast then? I love the sport, I want to grow the sport and all that, but at the end of the day, if you told me you can do the rest of your life with racing and your personal life would suffer for it or whatever, or you could do 25% of the races that you're doing now, but your personal life you'd have everything you ever wanted, I would be I'll go 25% racing. Yeah. For me, my life doesn't necessarily revolve around it. It's a big part of it, but I just got to the point where there's just bigger things in life. And I've just kind of realized it's okay to stay home. It's okay to not want to go. And I kind of look at Attica, for example. I've told, Justin Liskey, I'm going to get you a video. I'm going to get you a video. And I really wanted to go last weekend for the Ambush two-night show, at least one of the nights. And obviously Saturday got rained out. But Friday, I'm driving home and I'm I could still get to Attica on time if I went straight there. But I was watching someone's dog that, it means a lot to me. And I was in a place that felt like home. I was at peace where I was at. And I was just I am not going to go to Attica. I have another week I can do it. Hopefully it don't rain. I need to do what is going to be best for me tonight. And for me, it's at a point there are times where that's going to be racing and there's times where it's not. Millstream the other week, us go to Millstream, that's gonna be the best for me right now. I need to do something. I can't sit here at my grandparents and rot my brain away. Let's go to Millstream. Yeah. And there's gonna be times where it's I don't want to. I look at Four Crowns coming up. I will go to that race. I don't care. That is one of my favorite races of the year. That's my getaway. That's gonna be my mental health day. For me, it's perfect. And I've gotten to this point, I just pick my battles, I think, more wisely. And I've kind of have sucked at that a lot and been I pick this one. And then that one bites me in the ass a month later. And then I look at the other one and I'm I should have went with that. And I don't. And now it's I'm just more mindful of those things. And I'm what happens if I do this? What happens if I do that? And if I don't do either, where does that put me? And it's just kind of stuff like that. I'm at just, I said, at a point, racing means a lot to me, but it's not everything. I don't do this for a living. If the opportunity arose to where I could just do content creation for a living, I would probably do it for a little bit at least, but it's not, it's a hobby, I guess you could say, or, something I just like doing, but it's, there are bigger things to life than that. And it's we talk about lenders and the life lessons, and there's just so many things I take from racing into my own life that I can kind of be cool. And I talked to Zane when we were doing the episode one, and I don't think it actually made the final cut of the podcast, but, and of course, if you're listening to this, you ought to listen to episode one, but we did have a, we had a discussion about the perfect lap, and I was like, the perfect lap doesn't actually exist. Like, you watch Ford versus Ferrari and he talks about the perfect lap, and I'm like, it doesn't exist, because I could sit here and say Lee Jacobs's track record on Fremont's the perfect lap. Sure, it's a perfect lap until somebody someday beats it, and then you're going to be like, well, that's the perfect lap. And I was like, well, you said that was a perfect lap, so which one is it? Because if it was perfect, it wouldn't get beat. And I kind of just look at that in life as general. It's like, I thought that was a perfect lap. Hindsight's 2020. That was not the perfect lap. I could have done something completely different. I could have went this way. I zigged when I should have zagged. I did the spin move when I should have juked, and all this stuff. And it's, you know, I just, they're like, I take that from racing into my own life and use it to build where I'm currently at. And, you know, it's weird how that correlates, but like, in a way, if you can connect the dots, connect the dots. But you can only do that looking back. That's another quote I had, you know, I recently had just heard. It's, you know, you can't connect. I think it might be a Steve Jobs quote, but you can't connect the dots looking forward because you don't know where the dots are at, but you can look in the past and connect the dots and find out exactly how you got to where you're at. And it's like, whoa, like, that makes so much sense. Cause if I draw a line from the dot where I'm currently at today and I drew it 45 degrees upwards, and I said, I think this is where the dot's going to be tomorrow, I am setting myself up for disappointment or something like that, because the dot that is going to happen tomorrow is actually going to be 180 degrees, the complete opposite direction. But a week from now, when I go back and I connect the dots for all 7 days, and I say, I was here on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, back to Monday, and I'm like, ah, it makes sense. And then you zoom out, like a connect the dots, you know, art project, and you're like, oh, look, it's a beautiful picture. It's, you know, I have kind of just let go on trying to force things, and I'm like, when it happens, it happens, and I'll look back on it and be grateful for the journey.
When you said something about, you know, the racing and personal life deal, I think a lot of kids that grew up in racing don't realize there's stuff outside. Where you've traveled, you've gone, you know, the military, the you know, following the rock band, whatnot, and or whatever band, and they, you just get to experience new things. I grew up in a place where racing wasn't a thing, really. And all my friends, I played, you know, three sports growing up and all the way through high school, and had, you know, lifelong friends that they knew what racing was, maybe, you know, best friends that had stopped at a couple of races, and then, yeah, and you were okay with pushing things off with them. Oh, man, they get it. You know, that's one of the guys that understands that I'm going to the races, and he knows what it means to me, so it's fine. But, you know, then I lost one, and, you know, my best friend, I lost him, and that was a reality that set into me that, you know, there is so much more to life than racing. I look back at every single time I told him no hanging out, because we were doing stuff with the race car, or, you know, going racing or whatever. And I regret those times. So, and I mean, you said hindsight's, you know, 2020, but, there's a lot of people around you that don't realize, or that do realize what you're doing. And, it's honestly, I sit back sometimes and I feel selfish where, hey, we're like, a couple weeks ago, we were going to Sharon and it's going to rain. You know, it's just a matter of at what time it rains. And so, you know, everybody trekked out there, grandparents, you know, dad's girlfriend, all my crew guys, my girlfriend, I think she was there. She might have stayed home. I don't remember, but if she stayed home, she was smart. But you get there and you know it's going to rain out. You get past qualifying and here it comes. It rains. Well, now everybody gets to track back. And they get track back dirty. So you don't realize sometimes how selfish you're being in it. And it's okay to take the weekends off, you know, a weekend off here or there. At the very forefront of this all, I'm a race fan. Like, there's guys that I've passed and I thought, holy shit. Like, I think my first night in 410, I passed Brian Smith, and I watched Brian my whole life, you know, grew up watching Brian. And I got to his outside and I thought, holy shit, I'm passing Brian Smith. This is like unfathomable young Chris, you know? And so I look back a lot and just realize, like, man, little young Chris would be so stoked about this. And that's cool. But at, you know, I get to be a race car driver. I get to go to the racetrack. I get to race. Like, how fortunate am I? How cool is that? Like, there's so many, like you said, you feel like you have to go to Fremont, or, you know, you have a bad day and you know, man, I have those days. Even when we're going to the racetrack and I want to go, I'm like, I'm be driving, man, you know, we could be sitting at home. Whether I don't play a lot of video games, but, you know, if we want to sit at home, play video games, sit at home, drink some beer in the pool, or you know, just do whatever, do anything other than race, that'd be okay. But man, how cool is it that I get to go race tonight? I get to strap behind, you know, a beast and go do whatever. That's one of the coolest things, especially to, you know, a younger version of myself. This is the coolest thing in the world. I still think it's probably one of the coolest things in the world. Mike Linder always tells me it's the most fun you can have with your pants on.
I've heard that one before. Yeah. I've heard that one before.
He's pretty spot on. That's how I've always changed my attitude with it. I'll be a little pissy or grumpy or whatever. And man, I get to go drive a race car tonight. And if I'm grumpy or too grumpy before, we just don't go, you know. And it's just changed my whole look on life, whether, you know, it was losing my best friend or just come to Jesus, or, you know, reality hit you in the face kind of moment, where there is so much more to life than the racing. And it's just the coolest part of your life, honestly. But don't mean it's not taxing and tolling, and, you know, there's work that goes on that nobody knows about. You know, it's 9:40 now, and I don't know how long we've been recording, but it's we're working on a race car. You know, shoot, we just found out we got a front axle that needs pulled in the morning. So it looks like a lot of fun, all of it does, but a lot of fans don't see, you know, what goes on behind. I know everybody says that. And I know your goal here is get a little bit beyond the visor, not just in shops and whatnot, because you know how it goes with, you know, your dad racing and whatnot. But the fact that you're getting out here to spread that whole message of, like, honestly, to me, beyond the visor means there's beyond racing. Like, there's so much more to life than it. Now you get a full-time race car driver for, you know, that race for a living. That is their life. So they are going to speak differently, but, you know, we go to work every day in the morning and have to clock in and, you know, do your job. And those guys, I know what that feels like. It still feels like work, but man, how fortunate are you to get to work on these things for a living, or race these things for a living. So it's just such a, you know, just an aspect of life or that you got to look at.
Yeah. You look at, like, you know, guys like Byron Reed and, you know, a couple other of them, like, you know, Byron's like, that kind of stepping away. He announced this, I mean, years ago, that he was kind of going to cut back because he wants to spend time with his family. And, you know, now he's out of it with, you know, wants to be with the kids and stuff like that. And as, like, a fan, you know, you kind of look at it and you're like, okay, like, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like, the kids, you know, got sports on the weekend, like, that checks out. And, you know, you and I can, you know, probably, you know, both attest. I can really attest up until 2007. But it's not just a weekend deal. Like, it's, you don't just lose the weekends. Like, I can vividly remember, you know, every day of a summer, being at my grandparents because the race car needed work done. Like, I can remember, you know, 2005, 2006, when my dad drove for Farmer. Like, we were in Fremont at the shop. It felt like every other day just working. And it was like, all right, we're off work. You're done with school. Fremont, we go. We're there. We go home at like 9 o'clock and you go to sleep. And it's like, I played baseball in school. I played baseball in the summers, you know, all that. And it was like, you're just trying to manage both of those things. And it's like the kids, you know, I was growing up, my dad's trying to spend time there. And I am very fortunate. My dad, I think, went to almost every single one of my baseball games, except if they were like super far away games in high school. And at that point, he was out of racing. But it's like, you know, I got fortunate enough, because I think by the time I was at a point where I was playing very competitive sports like high school baseball or travel type baseball, like, my dad was out of the racing scene, so it made it easier. But, you know, you see these guys pull out and you're like, okay, I can get that. But like, it's not just a Friday, Saturday thing. It is a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday thing. And for me, it's, you know, you talked about losing a best friend, and it's like I said, I was going to, you know, working from 8 to 3 on a Saturday, and I'd go home, grab my stuff, and I'd go to the racetrack. I would be lucky if I got home at 11 o'clock. And it's like, by the time I got home, you know, my girlfriend at the time is asleep. And if she's not asleep, she's probably getting ready to go to sleep. So, you know, you walk into the house, it's 11 p.m., the only person greeting you is the dog, and you're at a dirt track, so you have to shower. You know, I'm not going to leave my camera equipment on my truck. So, like, I got to bring it all in, and I'm trying to be quiet and blah, 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 you know. And once you're showered and you're like ready for bed, it's almost midnight. And on some nights it's 1 a.m. and you get in bed and you like try to be quiet because you don't want to wake them up. And then you go to sleep, you wake up the next day and it's Sunday and you're like, oh, okay, you stretch in the morning and you're like, oh, cool, okay, I'll spend time together. I got editing I got to do. So it's, you know, do whatever I got to do around the house. And I was really bad at that in retrospect. But you do whatever you got in the house and you're editing. And I'd probably edit, like, there was nights I'd edit from 2 o'clock to like 10 PM. And, she would, you know, check in every hour or so and be like, how's it going? And I'm like, and I'd have like 2 clips edited. Like, I sat there for an hour and I got 2 clips in, and I'm scrolling through YouTube trying to find copyright free music. And she's like, how are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. And then I'm sitting there and she comes back in, and then it repeats, and it's like 6 o'clock at that point. And you're like, oh, what are we going to do for dinner? I don't really know. Luckily, like, we kind of took Sundays as like our lazy day and just did corn dogs, or we'd go to Woody's or something. But it's like, then you go eat. And then once you're done eating, like, you're right back to editing. And it's like, you just lose. I was losing entire weekends, basically, to racing and video editing and content creation. And I was kind of like, this is like, it's going to pay off one day on the content creation side, but like, what's the cost? And like, the cost at this point was pretty much everything. Like, and there's much more to it than just the racing aspect. But like, I look back at it now and I'm like, the job I'm working at, it's a day job, is not great. You know, I'm only getting home 3 hours a day, and then, you know, I'm losing my weekends and all this stuff. And it's like, now I look back on it, and if I could do it differently, I 100% would. But, you know, I can't change it now. It's too late. But it's like, I feel that losing a best friend thing. 'Cause like, ultimately, like, I lost my best friend, and I look at the racing thing and I say, you know, that's part of it. And, she, you know, was supportive of racing in general, and she enjoyed it. And one of our first dates, we went to Attica once, and it rained out, I think right after hot laps or something like that. And we drove back from Attica, and I dropped her off at her house, whatever. And I had a Mountain Dew bottle in my passenger seat or in my cup holder, and she grabbed it and started using it as a microphone to like ask me questions. And it's like, in my head, like, it's just seared in my mind as like this core memory. And I correlate that memory to racing, and it's a great memory and it's awesome. But then I correlate some of these more recent ones, and I'm like, racing cost me my best friend. And it's like, the best of both worlds. Like, it is the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And like, it's not like the highest of highs is me winning a race and the lowest of lows is me wrecking a race car. The highest of highs is me having this awesome memory that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. And the lowest of lows is me looking at racing and saying, this probably cost me this. Yeah. I have to accept that. And like, now, you know, this is two nights in a row I've recorded an episode for the podcast, and it's like, I'm doing this now because I don't have to give the time outside of this. Like, at this point, this is all focus, eyes are on this. But, you know, it's like, if I was in a situation where I was, I'd be like, I probably wouldn't even start this podcast, to be honest. And it's just like, it's crazy to me. And it's like, right now I'm all for it. One day I'm going to get to the point where I'm going to be like, all right, probably need to dial back a little bit and say there are life things to attend to. You cannot be all 100% racing right now. And luckily for me in the winter, like, winter hits, the content creation can kind of stop. Like, the podcast, you know, we'll try to do episodes in the winter because it's probably one of the better times to do it. But like, there's no editing that really needs to be done. So like, my whole plan for the winter is I got season tickets to the Toledo Walleye. I'm going to go to like half those games. I'm going to enjoy myself. And then when March and April comes back around, it's right back to the grind and we go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's high. I signed up for the basketball coaching deal, and I guess I didn't really sign up. I try to tell my friend no, but I'm really fortunate or excited that I said yes. So there goes my off season. That's going to, I think, picks up here. I think I got to go meet with them next week, and then I'll get out of it in March, I believe, is – I believe March something is the state championship, not that we're – I'd like to go there. That'd be cool, but, you gotta be a little realistic at times. So, that would be the very last week of the season. So that's the winner right there. And so on top of that, we'll be tearing apart race cars and getting motors rebuilt and, you know, try to find free time beyond basketball. And I tell you, my family is, incredible about it, where my dad's girlfriend, she's new to all this, hadn't been to a race. I'm not sure she knew what a race car was before they got together, and she's been incredible. Whether it's almost another Steph presence of like, hey, you know, everything's fine. You know, or you're sitting there doubting yourself. And the one night she just walked up and she said, do you realize what just happened? I said, yeah, I went out and turned maybe the worst lap I've ever created myself. And she's like, no, after that, nope, I've been pissed off since. And she's like, those four guys just come up to you and asked you, you know, whatever questions. And it was all based on racing. And she said, you're not dumb. They asked you what your opinions were on the racetrack. So you have some sort of, you know, brain or whatever. They know you can do it or they wouldn't ask you. So why don't you just calm down, you know, go be a racer. Like, and I was, that was like, I don't know, maybe your second month into racing, and she was already calling me out on my being a baby thing, and that was pretty funny. But she was right. And my mom, she don't go to the races much, really hardly at all. I'm her baby. I joke, but I'm serious. I'm the favorite kid. So I don't know that she loves seeing it. Maybe her first race that she went to, I flipped, and she's been to a handful since, but I think she's only been back in the pits once because I told her it was her fault. So she doesn't go too much, but she's still supportive of it. She doesn't understand it quite as much. My girlfriend, she came from not racing at all. She had, again, she was another one, no idea what racing was. And like you said earlier, you probably, express your displeasures more at people. I'm the same way. I've tried to get way better, and I feel I have gotten way better, but there's times where you just standing in the wrong spot, you know. It's just not even, you know, I could be mad that you're breathing the same air as me and you didn't do anything wrong. It's just I'm just mad at life at that point. So she always jokes, and it's probably not really a joke at all that she gets the blame or she gets the anger taken out on her. And she's beyond anything I could have ever imagined I would be able to figure out. But there's ups and downs with that stuff too. So, the ups are that somehow I'm still managing to get support from her out of it. And then all my friends, you know, I've already said my dad's there all the time, but my friends, all of them have jumped on board nearly. You know, my cousin used to travel for work. He jumped on, he's not traveling for work now. He's in the shop, which is awesome, 'cause he's a good hand. Chase, he's more like a brother to me now. There's been weeks where I don't even get to work on a race car. He either has it done or I'm, you know, not a good, coworker, and he just does it and he's pissed at me, but he does it and we go race, and, you know, I try to reward him those nights. Not that it ever happens, but man, you know, you still try, but I'm really fortunate for the support I have. So I don't want to forget anybody when we're talking about this stuff, but there's just a couple that have stuck out, like, you know, my dad's girlfriend and my girlfriend. And I know my mom is supporting me, but she's not going, which I don't think I would really want to see my kids trapped in a race car either. So, and I pray to God I don't. I really don't want them to get down this road somehow. My girlfriend's tall, I'm tall. I'm hoping they're too tall to stick in the cage. So, the support thing's real though, because you don't have, you know, those long nights, you don't have anybody else. You know, most of the time you're driving the trailer home, and it's out a dark windshield, and half the time we're getting flashed by people because our truck's lights look bright, and so we're getting flashed, and you're pissed off, and you're screaming at them. They can't hear you. All the people around you just have to deal with you screaming absurd words at people that can't hear you.
I'm the worst. I have terrible road rage. Like, I am so bad. If I come home from Attica on Route 4 and I'm stuck behind someone going 55 and I can't pass them, all hell is going to break loose.
But the fact they put up with it, because I've heard the things I've said, I'd probably be like, dude, calm down. What is wrong with you? Did you just wish that upon that person? I'm like, yeah. But, you know, they deserve way more credit than anybody. They're like the offensive linemen in football. They do all the work. They deal with all the crap, and all they get is a sliver of the pie, and it's a small sliver. So, I got a buddy that's having a baby. He works on the race car. He did. I'll do a joke. I hope he listens to this. He did work on a race car. No, he still does when he can, but that's a big, you know, part of life. And that's where I understand, you know, I'm fortunate that I can understand that stuff. So at some point I'm going to have to, you know, move on from racing, hopefully later than sooner. But right now I couldn't afford to have a family, a house, a kids, and a race car. So, hopefully something changes and I can't afford it all, but I wouldn't be mad if my kids didn't grow up seeing me race. There's videos enough. That's enough proof that it happened, and they don't need to see the grind. They don't need to see anything like that. They just go be kids. You know, I do think kids grew up different with being in, you know, you're from Castilla, Fremont, wherever, close enough, but these kids out here aren't Mike Keegan. Like, Mike Keegan's one of my best friends, and we have such different life, you know, and I know why, but that's something I'd be okay with my family not growing up the same way he did necessarily, or a lot of kids that do, so.
Yeah, I'm like the same way. Like, I think if I'm ever lucky enough to have kids, like if they wanted to race, I think I'd let them and all that. But like, I don't know, like some people just like, they're like, my kid's going to race. And then they force their, you know, they force the kid to race. And like, if my kids want to do it, sure, whatever. If, you know, the money's there, we can do it. For me, it's, you know, I just want them to do what they want to do. And I think, you know, and I want to be at a point too in my life where I can do the same. Cause I think now it's like, you know, I'm 27, I'm coming up to 30 a lot quicker than I'd want to admit. But, you know, I for years watched my dad race and it was, you know, all we ever did. And now, you know, it's been, you know, 10 plus years since he's last drove. And like the guy goes to races every weekend because that's what he wants to do. But like, he's got his own hobbies now. And it's like, he finds enjoyment out of it. You know, we went golfing, I think, was it 2 weeks ago on a Friday? We got done at like 6 p.m. We would have never done that if he was still racing. But like, we went golfing at 6 p.m., just him and I and a couple of his, you know, guys, you know, from where he works. And it's like, it was enjoyable. We laughed. He broke a club. We laughed our ass off, like all his things. And it's like that stuff I would never get to experience if he still raced. And like now that he's out, there are different things that we find enjoyment in. And, you know, I told him, you know, we're going to have to go to a lot of walleye hockey games now because the person I was planning to go with isn't going to go. But, you know, we joke about that stuff. But like now I get to see him blossom. It's weird to say blossom and he's in his 50s, but like blossom in his own way. Like he, you know, he loves to do what he does on the weekend. He's, you know, he's proud of it. And, you know, I get to kind of watch from afar and, you know, eventually I think maybe this winter I'll start going with him to some of the things he does and try to maybe follow in his footsteps and be a little bit better. But, yeah, I just kind of see that. And it's like, now that I see him doing that, I almost pull inspiration from it to like do what I want to do. And if it's not racing, it's not racing. So be it. And then, you know, one day I hope my kids are the same. But yeah, it's just all that stuff. And, you know, now I said in the Zane episode, like I got people that support me in what I do. And my grandma, I'm staying with them right now just cause it's kind of close to work. And I walked in the house before I came out here. I was there for like 5 minutes and I'm leaving. I'm going to go record another podcast. She's like, oh, all right. And she's like, when are you going to release all these? And I'm like, eventually, like I got to record. I want to get a good stockpile first and all that. But like, they're super supportive. Like my grandma's never listened to a podcast in her life, I don't think, but she'll listen to this one and that's cool. And my grandpa's, you know, getting back into racing a little bit and going with us and all that. So it's pretty cool to, you know, be around a family that supports everything you do. And, I posted a video on Instagram from the Zane episode, and a kid that I went to school with, I used to be really good friends with him, was like, keep the content up. And I don't think I've talked to him in, it's probably been 5 years or whatever, but it was just cool to see that. Cause it's like, nice. Like I didn't think you really cared, but it's cool that you see it and you want more. Like that's awesome. And I appreciate the support, but you know, it's just stuff like that. Like you kind of get into a space where you're like, I don't know if this is worth it anymore. Like, I don't feel like I'm doing anything. And then you like put out a really good video or like a really good clip or something like that. And it's like, oh, this is awesome. And this, what you're doing is really cool. And it's like, you know, it's like if you're playing Call of Duty and you got a stim and you just shoot it, you know, it's like getting that adrenaline boost. You're like, oh, all right, perfect. Like that's all I needed to get to the next weekend. Awesome. Let me, you know, run over there and all that. So it's got its ups and downs. And I think if I didn't have the people to have to support me, I don't think I would probably be doing any of it. So,
yeah, I think you just, I give a lot of credit to my parents because I don't know if they raised me right. I think people would tell them they did. I feel they did, but they, just raised me to be myself. You know, I look back at, you know, childhood memories that you think of and you're like, wow, I can't believe my dad or mom let me do that. I cannot, what the heck was wrong with them? And then I realized they just let me be a kid, you know? And, so I surround myself with people that, you know, I really trust and, love and enjoy being around. And, that's where your support system comes from, you know, but the little boosts where it's, you know, like a buddy texting you or just a kid from school or whatever, it's cool to get those because you don't realize people see what you're doing, you know? And so even if it's just liking a picture, sometimes that goes a little ways. Oh, man, that's cool. You kind of got noticed at least, or you know, whatever you post pictures for us is attention. For you, it's content. But no, I'm 100% with you. Your support system goes so far. Like my grandma, she would not give a single shit if she ever went to another race again. But if I'm there, you almost have to fight. Like it's 100 degrees, grandma. You don't need to be outside. Stay in a camper. Go sit in a camper with the AC. It's on video. It's on TV. You can watch it. You got dirt vision. And shit, though, not fits, but she never lets me hear them because she knows I'm stressed out enough. But yeah, it and my grandpa, I don't think if, you know, I think he went to one race or two races maybe between the time my dad raced and I raced, which is, you know, plenty of time. And I'm not sure he's missed one. He may have missed one. I don't remember. And I'm sure if he did, he was pissed about it. I think he had double knee surgery. So I believe he did miss one. But those, you know, they bought a camper just because we were going to Attica Fremont all the time. And they lived in Columbus. They just moved up here. And like I said, he's retired and he's a pilot. So he's got two airplanes at the hangar 5 minutes from home. And every time I call him and tell him, like, you know, hey, there's a special project, or hey, this needs done during the day. If there's something that needs done during the day, it's that project falls on him, and he loves it. You know, I know I annoy him sometimes, but he's fallen in love with the sport. And you know, my grandma joked the other day that my nephew wanted to play games in the arcade or something, and he wouldn't give him the money to do it. And she said, if you'd asked him for, you know, whatever you needed for this race car, it'd have been bolted on the next second if he had it, you know? And she said, but for him, he wouldn't give him $5 to go play video games. And I'm like,
yeah, so. It's, I mean, talk about like support. I look at, you know, I don't know if you've ever read or seen the movie Into the Wild. But the principle of the book in the movie is, you know, he basically feels like happiness does not rely on human relationships, and he finds it in nature. And, you know, and he goes out there to Alaska, and, you know, he is basically completely on his own. And, you know, he finds his bus in all this, and it's, you know, it's a really neat and fascinating story. But he, you know, he says, you know, happiness does not rely on social interaction. But he goes through all this, and he gets kind of to the end of his life, and he's getting sick and he's getting weak. And, you know, on his deathbed, he basically comes to the realization that he was wrong. And he's like, you know, it does. And I think really the moral of the story is, like, it doesn't rely on human interaction, I more so, because you can have happiness without it. But happiness is better when it's shared. And I, for a very long time, didn't think that. And I was like, you know, if I'm happy, that's all that matters. But it's like, I've been in situations and I've been, you know, super happy. And I'm like, oh, yes, 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 I did it. I'm whatever. And but then it's like 3 hours go by, it's 11 p.m. and I'm laying in bed and I'm like, I wish I could tell somebody how awesome that was, yeah. You know, how happy I am. And then, like, once you realize, like, they're, you know, you're in a situation, you know, where you don't have anybody to tell, it's like the happiness just vanishes. And it's like, it meant nothing. And, like, it's so, it's one of those things I don't think we cherish enough when we have it, is the ability and people around us that we can share our happiness with and be like, you're awesome. And then that in turn support us, and that makes us even happier. And it just builds off of each other. Like, if you don't have that, like, you, I don't want to say you have nothing, but like eventually, like, you kind of come back down to earth and realize, like, you need those people around you, and without them, like, you aren't ever going to get to where you are, I think, truly happy, or like truly in a place that you want to be.
Yeah, I so I always felt that when you're going good, man, everybody's having fun. That's that's that on top of the world feeling, whether, you know, it's a hard charger from, you know, 24th to 9th or, you know, top five, whatever. Even like heat race wins, which as a driver, that's what you're supposed to do. If you start on a pole, you're supposed to go win it. Man, it really boosts your team though. Like they really, I mean, it's cool that they want you to win, obviously. So, those kind of things are so, you know, small and they don't mean anything, but man, when everybody around you is happy, you feel like you've done something. And then when you suck and they feel it's not a big deal, you know, and man, it is a big deal. I just let all you guys down. That's I've broke this down with people. That's 6 or 7 pit passes. That's 6 or 7 hours of their day, probably between the drive there, time at the racetrack, drive back, sometimes more. Sometimes you got 7 hours just driving. All the food that they eat there, what they could have been doing, whether it's grocery shopping, you know, spending time with their dog or, you know, whatever. And that all falls on your shoulders because you sucked. You know, that's a hard part of having a big support system. You know, you look at some guys show up to the race car track or the racetrack with their race car, their trailer, and one guy that maybe they pay to be there. Well, and they can be so full of themselves that it don't matter if they go good or not. One, it's not their fault that they didn't go good, and two, they didn't, you know, let nobody down. I feel I have the weight of my whole crew, team, friends, support system on my back. You know, like, you know, one of the most, you said, you know, sometimes you only have you. One of the most selfish quotes I've ever heard was Antonio Brown said, not that, you know, that's a guy you want to go after, but he made a solid point just as delivery was gone that, you know, everybody else around you is so lucky because they get to, or around him, he said, everybody around me is so lucky because they get to see me play. He said, that's where I'm jealous of you. And the only way I'm jealous of you is that you guys get to see me play every day or live. And well, you'll never get to see that. Or he'll never get to see that. Well, I thought about that for a long time, and I think his delivery was wrong. But the point of, like, I'll never get to watch myself race or watch this, hopefully never have to watch this race car race without me in it, but without already knowing what happens next or thinking about what happened, and then you get to see it on the race, you know, on film or whatever. That weighs on me, but that's something that is weird to think about, that you know, like, you can watch anybody. Sheldon's a fun guy to watch, and you have no idea what he's thinking sometimes. But, man, it's exciting. Even if it's not going fast, it can be exciting. There's times where I feel that that's all we're doing is being exciting. I had Jack Fortney tell me one night, Jack's hard charger for the AFCS. I think I blew it off the top of Fremont and going into one 3 times in the heat race. And for some reason, you just keep trying harder, and then you do it again. But I went up to him after, and I said, well, that was pretty embarrassing. He said, I'll tell you one thing. You sure as hell are exciting. And I said, Jack, that ain't always the goal. And he goes, I don't care if it's the goal. He said, if you're fun to watch, I'm going to watch you. You know, the rest will come. I remember that night, and I had 2 or 3 people tell me that, and it's just – I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but the pedal is on the floor. We're in the grip. I'm the only one 4 wheels above the shit. I have to have grip. I know I have it. Why am I not driving by them on exit, you know, only on entrance? And then they pull back even and we're drag racing again. But now I do feel that being exciting is part of it. You know, I think we're entertainers, but we're not entertainers at all.
Yeah. Talked about, you know, the Antonio Brown comment, you know, people don't know how lucky they are to, like, I've been thinking about it since you said it, and it's like, I kind of look at it, you know, when I played baseball, and, you know, anybody plays high school sports, like, you're playing the sport, like, you get enjoyment out of it. It's like kind of like your way of having fun. But at the same time, you know, I kind of look, and it's like I said, like earlier, like, my dad made pretty much every single game, and I'm like, you know, I can only imagine what it's like for him to, you know, be there and watch your son play baseball or whatever. And like, it kind of, you know, goes back to the Antonio Brown, like you racing. It's like, you know, you don't want to seem selfish or like conceited about yourself, but it's like, you know, how lucky really are we that we have people that get to watch us do this and get enjoyment out of it. Like, it's not like they're watching it and they're like, oh, we're only watching it because we have to. Like they're watching it and they're, you know, maybe in racing they're not enjoying it if you're not doing good or you're you know, flipping down the backstretch or something. But like, you know, they're there and they get to watch you do something that you're passionate about, which in turn makes them happy or excited. And it's like, you know, you take off the zoom lens and you look at bigger picture and it's just all one big, like, kind of conglomerate thing. And you're just like, you know what, that the Antonio Brown quote, even, you know, how he said it is, you know, whatever, but like, it makes sense. Like, how lucky is everyone that they get to watch me do this? And then how lucky am I that I get to have people that get to watch me do it and all of that? So, I mean, it's a really neat perspective to look at it in and kind of think like, oh yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
So much of a thinker.
Think I would do.
So much of a thinker. Cause I've joked, like, oh, I've told Chase, I mean, you're lucky you get to watch me sometimes, not cause it's going well, but I just, you know, it'd be cool to sit back and watch yourself as a race fan and not know the next move. And like, you know, whether it's a wow factor in a good way or a bad way of being like, wow, that was stupid, I can't believe you just did that. Or, hey, dumbass, quit missing the bottom or whatever. Or wow, that was impressive. Like, and you get to have people that do enjoy supporting you. So, and I've asked sometimes you ask the wrong people the questions and they give you really blunt answers. Like, I felt something was pretty entertaining one time and I got told it was pretty stupid. There was no point in risking a race car. And dads will do that. You know, they'll tell you that, but the hard part they probably balance on is, you know, my dad always says, this is where the guys that are putting down laps are running. And then this is where I think you should be. And so the night at Sharon, we qualified really well. I think it was a speed week show. We qualified well. Everybody's up there banging the fence down and trying to knock the fence down. The times are slowly dropping, like low, mid 16s, low 16s area. And then you go watch some of the guys that race there a lot. And you're like, oh, that's, you know, that's on the, they're on the fence, but they're not on the fence like a Cale Thomas or a Dale or Dave Blaney, where they are so comfortable being on the fence, or Cap, whoever, you guys that race for a good majority of their money, that they go up there, they try to knock the fence down. They look like, you know, hey, good effort. So I told my dad the one night, I said, hey, I'm going to pretend I care this first lap. And then the second lap, I'm going to be a pussy. And he said, fine by me. Just be careful on the pretend lap or something. And I think he thought I was joking. I went out and I rolled the top like just like a guy that has to go to work tomorrow. And I rolled it and it was horrible. And I had the wing all the way back and I rolled right through the bottom to the center. And I get out of the car and Cale Thomas was like first one to me. He's like, what'd you do? And I'm like, I just rolled the center. And he's like, really? I said, yeah, why? And he goes, dude, I think you're fourth quick in our group or in whatever. I said, that's a little bit surprising because I know who's behind me. And he's like, you just rolled right through the center. I was like, yeah. And so we talked about it for 5 minutes. And the son bitch gets his wing back in the heat race and he drives right by me, right through the center. So it's a double-edged sword. But I know my dad was pretty excited about the second lap because I was not near the fence, but that's kind of you have to be there is on it.
So that stuff like that's kind of cool to think about. And then, you know, when you look back on it, you're like, that did happen. I remember that now and stuff like that. And I'm sure like if I were to go back into my folders of videos or whatever, I probably have a video of you just sending it in there. And I know for a fact, I have one of you just blowing it over the top. And I was like, cause I just remember every lap I was like, he's going to do something. Either this is going to be really cool or like this is going to go really bad. Either way, like I at least want to get it on camera.
I always feel when you have the most confidence is when you hit the hardest. And it's what I've figured out. Every flip I've had has come after a good run or whatever, you know, you're as comfortable in a race car as you've been, and you're confident in it, and you're confident, you're really confident in yourself. You know, you can do no wrong. And,
confidence then, is a scary thing.
Oh man. It kills is a you.
Scary thing. It puts you in places. You get confident and you think you're invincible, and then you learn that you are indeed not. Yeah, and that is,
you're stuck in the turn one and two fence.
Yeah. Even outside, like in life in general, like,
well, yeah,
you get confident, you start to feel like you cannot be beat. You feel invincible. You're like, nothing can go wrong.
You win one or two arguments with the old lady and you are on top of the world.
Oh, I mean, you just, I remember being in Texas and a series of events happened and I got so confident. It was bad. And I was just like, to the bar we go, nothing wrong is going to happen. And then the next morning I woke up, looked at some text messages, tried to talk to somebody, and I was like, yikes. Like, this is, all that confidence I had's gone because, like, I fucked up.
Yeah.
Like,
what's that Mike Tyson saying? You got a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yeah.
Confidence is that plan. Reality is that punch in the face.
Confidence is the plan. Reality is the punch in the face, or that, like, you like gambling. Like, you play blackjack, you win four hands, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm hot. Let me double up my bet. And then it's, you know, right from the rip, the dealer's got blackjack and you lose all the money you just won. And you're like, that was pretty stupid. And then you kind of like go on a losing skid after that and you can't win anything. And you're like, I just need something. And
that's why I don't gamble. We went for my buddy's bachelor party a couple of weeks ago during the Nationals. And we rolled in. I saw somebody in there that I was shocked to see in there. I hope she's listening to this. I'm going to send her this if she's not. And we'll say names afterwards, but she all night, if my husband finds out, he's going to be pissed. He's going to be pissed. Well, she left with like 500, 600 bucks. She left up and I'm like, you can't be mad about that. And she's like, nope, just sold some stuff, you know? And, she goes, you going to gamble? I said, nope. I feel I gamble enough with the race car that, that I don't need to gamble in something I can't even control, you know? So, I might walk up to a machine, hit a button and walk away, you know, with $5 less than I walked up with, but I'm never mad about that.
I play blackjack just cause I feel like if there's any game in the casino I can somewhat control my luck at, it's blackjack. But like, I've played in Aruba, I've played in Canada, I've played in California, Ohio. Like, I've played in a lot of different places, and one thing never changes, and it's like racing. I can do everything right and by the book, but by God, the person next to you, if they don't do the right thing and like hit when they're supposed to hit, and the dealer gets a 21 and I have a 20, I'm swinging. Like, you just, like, if you would have hit, the dealer would have bust or whatever, and I would have won money. But now, because you didn't do your job, I lost. And it's like, well, I went in the turn one on the top, and you were trying to get the bottom and missed and came up, and now we wrecked. I'm like, it's like the same, in my head, they're the exact same thing. Like, you did not do your job. Now you're going to pay the price.
You're so close, too.
Now you're going to pay the price.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't recommend gambling. I mean, it's a good way to lose money. I'll do sports betting here and there. Like, I wish you could bet on racing in Ohio.
Yeah,
I would put like $20 in Caleb Henry weekly at this point, just because he always seems to start like six, and his odds probably like, I don't know, they may be plus 100, but I'd be like, $100 on him, he's probably gonna win.
I don't remember, it was Keenan McIntosh or Jason Pursley or whatever. Indiana win.
It was Emerson.
Emerson.
It was the night before Speed Week at Attica. Yeah, they had, it was like the first night they could have done the gambling.
And had like plus 600 or something.
He opened like plus, like, I thought it was like 2,000 or something. It was extreme odds, but someone put like $20 on him and won like $2,000. And I saw him at Attica and I walked up to him and I was like, heard you made a couple people rich last night. And he was like, yeah, I guess so. If I would have known, I would have put money on myself.
No kidding.
Went to a Speed Week show and I looked, I could have done it there, but like the odds were They were back to normal, unfortunately. I think I put money on Briggs Danner that night. I think he finished like fifth or whatever. But yeah, you can do it. And if they did in Ohio, I might be in trouble. All right. Well, we're approaching here about 2 hours.
Well, we got to do, I'm going to do rapid question with you. We're going to switch things around.
Oh God. That's, what do we got?
All right. You got to answer these quick. These aren't allowed to be thought out. Whew. Favorite shot, favorite spot to shoot at Fremont?
Turn one.
Favorite racetrack?
Kokomo.
Favorite car to shoot?
Anything that's bright colored. Anything that's bright colored. Dark cars, they mess with like the lighting on the camera and it turns everything else darker. If it's a light colored car, it's easy to shoot.
A dream event to shoot?
Four Crown.
Go-to food at Eldora?
I haven't had concession at Eldora in a long time, but pizza burger. That's the only right answer.
Favorite sport?
How dare you? I'm going to say it's a tie between college football and Toledo Walleye hockey. Racing's like a close second, but like...
I'd probably say college football.
College football? It's all I'll do on a weekend. Once racing's over, I'm going to sit there from noon to 3 in the morning for like the Hawaii games and just watch football.
At Pac-12, the old Pac-12 matchups at 11 o'clock.
Rest in peace, Pac-12. Well, we'll wrap this up here. It's like 11 p.m. here and all that. So we'll wrap up. Chris, I appreciate being on episode 3. We'll get this posted here. I think, you know, we go forward, we'll get more episodes in. We'll bring you back and all that. And ideally, we kind of have a more basis. I think of all the episodes up to this point, I think this one dove into a lot of the personal stuff the most, which I think is really where we wanted to go with this. So I appreciate, you know, all that and you know, honesty and kind of digging into some of that. And I guess we'll finish out the rest of this year, a couple more races left, and then we'll go into the winter and come back out the other side in March and go through it all again.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me on, and just everybody that the personal side of things, man, guys, just don't be afraid to reach out. And I'm heads up all the time. You can call me. My phone's always on the loudest ringer. You can ask anybody I know. You can call me and I'll answer. It's whatever. Life is beyond everything here. So I appreciate you having me on. I appreciate you pushing this whole movement of guys, you know, being beyond a race car driver and even some of us that just pretend to be race car drivers. But it's cool. I really appreciate you having me here.
Yeah, I just pretend to be media sometimes. So I kind of feel you. Yeah, there,
but you're good at it.
All right, guys, we'll kick this off and then we'll be back next week with someone new.